Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
Wow. It's been, I don't know how long since we've recorded an episode, but people, we are back.
And we're in person.
And we're in person.
We're looking at each other across the table.
Wow. And the view is really something to behold, people. Okay, let's do this. Guys, hi. I'm Andrea Rappaport, and I am, can I still say recently divorced?
Yes.
Okay, fine. I'll hold on to it for as long as I can. And I am recently divorced.
Okay, and I'm Morgan Sogsdill, a family law attorney practicing in Illinois, and I did not handle Andrea's recent divorce.
She did not, but we are here together to offer you an entertaining and insightful podcast called How Not to Suck at Divorce. It's all part of the process, and this is why we're here. Get your facts from experts.
Right, I agree with you. And remember, is a good way to think about it is, let's put things in buckets.
How not to suck at divorce.
Today, what are we talking about?
Today, we are talking about maintenance, or as the, what do we call it? And now, here's another question. We're starting off at the very beginning with a question. Is it just in Illinois that we call it maintenance? Or, because most people still refer to it as alimony.
Every state refers to it as something different. So whenever I talk to new clients, I always say maintenance, formerly known as alimony. And everybody knows the word alimony.
Right. That seems to be the word that everyone associates with how much money is my soon-to-be ex-spouse going to pay me because we were once married. And just so everybody knows, alimony or maintenance, as we call it in Illinois, it's different from child support.
Absolutely.
It's a totally different type of payment. So that's what we're talking about today. We are naming this episode High Maintenance because you know what?
Either spouse could be high maintenance, right?
Either spouse could be high maintenance, and we all want your maintenance to be high. So
exactly.
Here we go. Folks, let's roll the dice and talk a little about maintenance.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Bing!
All right, so let's talk about maintenance, Andrea.
Let's do it.
Okay, so since I practice in Illinois, we'll focus on Illinois law.
Okay.
All right. So we used to call it alimony. Now we're calling it maintenance. And entitlement to maintenance under Illinois law, and I'm talking about Illinois only, isn't a given. Was that shocking to you to know that?
I think I knew going into my divorce that No, I don't think I knew it wasn't a given. I think I knew that there was a formula in place that determined how much maintenance one would get and for how long one would receive maintenance. And I knew that my income would play a role in it, but I did not know that I, spoiler alert, could actually get divorced and get $0 in maintenance, which is what happened to me. I'm still kind of in shock that I ended up with nothing. But I didn't know that it wasn't a given.
Right. Because before you even get into income and the statute and the guidelines, you have to actually meet the threshold of whether you're a maintenance candidate. And I don't know what happened to you because I wasn't involved in your divorce, but I do know that the statute mandates that the judge may award maintenance. And what does that mean, guys? Everyone listening? That means that every judge is different, and there's factors that each judge considers to determine if you are in fact a maintenance candidate before even getting to the dollars and cents.
God, it's just here, and here's something else, and this is what I go back to time and time again for those of you who have been listening to this podcast for I think this is our 8th episode. So if you are 8 episodes deep, you will know this is why, ladies and gentlemen, it is so important to hire an attorney that not only knows the law, but is a really good communicator and knows how to express these facts to you, because I did not have that. And had I been armed with the knowledge that these are things that could happen, it's not that I would have done things differently, right? Because what could I have done? I don't think I could have changed anything. But having that realistic expectation set so that when I wasn't awarded any dollars, cents, shekels, pesos,
kunas,
euro, anything, like flax seeds, like anything, I would not have been dumbfounded, like literally jaw on the ground, crying, just thinking like how unfair this whole thing was.
Well, that's the tough part too, because every judge is different. Mm-hmm. People listening to this need to know that every judge is human. So you don't know how your judge woke up that morning. Could have been a really bad fight with their spouse, and now they're determining your case. But what you do need to know, and what any good lawyer should tell you, are what are the factors to determine whether you even are a maintenance candidate. And in Illinois, we have 14 factors that a judge can consider. And in fact, the most important thing to remember is the 14th factor says that they can consider any other factor that a court expressly finds to be just and equitable. What does that mean? That basically means they can consider anything.
Okay, so let's give everybody a rundown. Let's give some of the top factors that you see most often.
Absolutely. So number one, out of the 14 factors, I'm just going to throw out a few that come to mind right away. One, the needs of the party. What are your needs on a monthly basis? Two, the realistic present and future earning capacity of each party. I mean, if we have a stay-at-home spouse and a breadwinner spouse, that is going to be absolutely considered. Is there any impairment of any spouse and earning? And then, another one that always comes to mind is, what's the time necessary to get a spouse up and running to get them to a good income level? Those are just a few of the things that come to my mind of the factors, but also things that go into it just to consider if you're a stay-at-home spouse, what your responsibilities look like with your children. Those are all factors that play into it. But again, remember the catch-all, it's basically anything the judge can consider.
It's crazy, and I think what's difficult now is that, and this is pretty common these days, is almost gone are the days where you have two people who have one employer, right? What do? I'm an accountant. What do? I'm a teacher, right? A lot of people patchwork. So it's I do a little of this, I do a little of that, or with myself, me and my, I can't remember at the time if my ex-husband was a 1099er or a full-time employee, I can't remember, but those contract gigs, it's really hard to track how much money you make, right? Because I can't remember, how many years do they go back for income?
So it all depends. I mean, a good lawyer is going to look at the income in the last few years and see if we could make a case to either impute income, which means basically figure out what's the median income. Yeah. And what the years look like. So if 5 years looks better for you, I'm going to ask for 5 years. If it's 3 years, it's 3 years. There's case law out there that really says you can go back around 3 years in Illinois,
right,
to make a good case.
I feel like, you know, for me, and what was interesting is during the process of my divorce, and I got divorced during COVID, so it was a little bit like the wild, wild west. My now ex-husband lost his job. And so what happens? Like, does that really throw a monkey wrench in these like maintenance decisions or not so much?
Absolutely, it throws a monkey wrench because any judge could take that into consideration and have some sympathy on that person.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good lawyer is going to sit with you and say, hey, you may not want to go forward at this point. You may want to wait a little bit till he's reemployed. You may want to sit back and get something behind him or her before you go forward. These are all factors that you have to consider before doing this, right?
It's interesting. So I was not counseled that way. And for me, so this, again, was during COVID. My now ex-husband lost his job, and I had my own business. I worked for myself, and my business largely depended on the world being open and functioning, which it wasn't. So I was also not bringing any money, but there was nobody representing me to convey that information to the judge. Like, I don't know how that was lost in translation or if that even was like attempted. So really the only thing that the judge looked at is, oh, you know, the husband lost his job,
right,
therefore, you know, blah, blah, blah. So again, this maintenance stuff is, it's tricky. There's nothing that's really black and white.
Right. I agree with you. And remember, the way that is a good way to think about it is, let's put things in buckets. The first bucket is, are you a maintenance candidate under the 14 factors that the judge has to consider to say, yes or no, you're a maintenance candidate. Let's just say we make it through that bucket. Yes, you're a maintenance candidate. Then we move on to the second bucket, which is how much maintenance and how long. And that is something that we could unpack for a very long time, depending on all these factors. But in Illinois, there's a guideline that you can run, but the guideline cuts off at a combined income of $500,000. So if two of you make over $500,000, the judge doesn't have to follow the guidelines. Under 500,000 or up to, I should say, the judge follows these guidelines for duration and amount. So then it kind of goes to what you're saying, right? So everyone's working different, you know, gigs or 1099 jobs in your situation. What's the true income? So a lot of cases we really dig into, okay, we've made it through bucket one, you're a maintenance candidate, but now it's really drilling down to figure out how much money is there to distribute. Does that make sense?
I think that is really helpful to help people who are going through the process or about to embark on the process understand that there's more than one hurdle to get over before you look at how much, right?
Right.
Is this even going to happen for you? And the other thing that I want to say is, I know, guys listening to this, you're thinking, what the hell? I might not even get maintenance. Are you kidding me? There is always a reason why you are getting divorced, right? And this means that you have exhausted all other efforts. You've done the therapy. You've done the work on yourself. And you know that the best choice for you and your family is to end the marriage. That means that you're going to lose something. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. It doesn't mean that it's not worth it. So don't let any of this information discourage you from doing what you need to do, as long as you know that this is right. But just know that it doesn't mean that just because you're leaving your marriage that your spouse is then then you are then entitled to getting all of this money on a monthly basis from your spouse.
Agreed. And here's the thing. A lot of people say, I just need to know, what do the numbers look like? Well, here's the thing for you to know, because you can run numbers. In Illinois, it's you can look up the calculators. It's basically 33 and a third of the payor's net annual income, less 25% of the payee's net annual income. And there's a 40% cap. So for the way I think about it is two groups. It's $500,000 combined and less, you can run it online. If you're over a net combined income of $500,000, which most of my clients are, the judge doesn't have to follow guidelines. It's just a recommendation that they can look at. And so then it really goes into a needs-based analysis, which is kind of what we're talking about, high maintenance, right?
Yep.
So if we're high maintenance and we have high expenses, we need to figure out an amount of maintenance to meet your needs. And that's why, going back to one of our old episodes, the financial affidavit is so important, because that's what plays into exactly what we're talking about.
Exactly right. So don't lie on that affidavit, folks.
Absolutely not.
If you get personal training, you got to put on there that you're getting personal training.
Exactly.
If you get whatever it is, you have to talk about it. And If you are somewhere in the middle, which is where most of this country lives, right? Like somewhere in that middle ground of, no, we're not making combined of 500,000. Like, we both work hard to get have what we have, and we are in the, I don't know, just 100,000 to 200,000 range or under that. You still have to be truthful. You have to talk. You have to be honest about what your needs really are, and the pieces will fall where they fall.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, it is subjective,
right?
And there's only so much that you can control. And that's a hard pill to swallow. But unfortunately, when you are going through a process and when you do have a judge involved, if the judge makes a ruling, the judge makes a ruling, and that's it. Now, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
For parties going through a divorce, and they both have representation, but they are trying to do this via mediation.
Right.
Do people ever have discussions about maintenance and come to a resolution that does not involve a formula?
All the time.
And what does that look like?
So I'll give you an example of one that I just recently did. The mom had stayed at home. The mom was a teacher. The mom had always discussed with the husband that she wanted to stay to get the kids back into main school. So like first, second grade, stay at home, I should say. The guidelines would not permit her to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The guidelines would not permit her. They would say, you've got to go back to work, basically. We had a discussion, and my client, who was the husband, said, you know what? You're right. We did talk about that. This is best for our kids. So therefore, I'm going to throw the guidelines out the window. I'm going to make sure that we can work this out. But then you have to give on a few other things. So that's why mediation is so creative. We know what could happen at court, but we use those as parameters to make it fit for each family.
So what you're saying is, here's another question. Is there ever a situation where someone can say, I will allow your maintenance to look like this until the children are of this age, and then it goes down to this? Because at that point, then I would anticipate you going back into the workforce. Or no, is maintenance something that is set in stone until the maintenance expires?
It can be as creative as you want. So
okay.
Yes, we can do that. A lot of times we tie maintenance into mediation creative settings, not where a judge is shoving something down, you know, the party's throats.
Mm-hmm.
We tie it to certain things happening. The kids going to full-time school, the kids graduating high school, the house selling, somebody taking over a house, making sure that they're comfortable for a few years, getting back on their feet. So we tie it to events
Okay. Just
to meet the needs of the family. That's why mediation is a good option to be creative.
And do you ever go back to renegotiate maintenance, or is it something that is set and you stick to that?
Okay, so that's a really interesting question, and this is something that's pretty subjective. But under our guidelines, you can kind of tell how long you've been married, how long you may get maintenance. Sometimes at the end of that term, it's what's called a reservation or a review, meaning that you would, if you didn't agree to more maintenance, you would come back before the court and tell the court all the reasons why you may or may not need more maintenance. And the court would determine whether you're entitled to it. So there's a review of maintenance. That's one option. Another one is termination of maintenance. So you can negotiate for a term of maintenance that terminates at the end. So there's different options for you. And depending on how long the marriage, that would be where we'd manipulate the options.
So now, but can you ever just go back into mediation instead of going back in court? To let's say, I'm just thinking of a hypothetical. Let's say somebody divorces. Both husband and wife work, but the husband earns more, and they have two small children. Okay, let's say that initially they agree that he's going to give her, $3,000 a month in maintenance,
right,
separate from child support. Fine. And then, but it's, now, is it done where they say, okay, I'm going to give you $3,000 a month, and since we were married for 10 years, it would be for what? I'm thinking off the top of my head, a 10-year marriage would equate to 3 years of maintenance?
I would have to run it on the guidelines, so yeah. I don't have an exact answer, but somewhere around there, I would say.
Yeah. So then, is that a term agreement, or is that the kind of thing where it is kind of like, it's like a gray area and it can be extended or not extended.
So that's the interesting part, because if you're in mediation, you can agree to whatever you want to agree to. Okay. So to answer your question, if it was a 3-year term, then we could build something into an agreement that says before you go to court on this, when you come back for a reservation of maintenance, when the 3 years is up, you have to mediate to determine whether you're entitled to more maintenance before you go to court. Most, I would say the majority of my cases settle in mediation before going to court.
So really, mediation is the way to go for a lot of things. Like if you're there to play ball.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. Okay. You have to have two people ready to play ball. And the only way they're ready to play ball is if either that's their personality or they know the risks behind them. So if you have two really great lawyers on both sides that are telling and advising their clients, this is what could happen at court. Most people come to mediation ready to play ball.
That's so good to know. Typically, this is like not exactly on topic of what we're talking about tonight, but now I'm curious. I know how long it took me to get divorced because we did not go the mediation route. This was all through a judge, and that was so much fun. How long can it take to get divorced via mediation? Is it the same way where you have to set up like court dates, or how does that work?
So usually we expedite things in mediation. I find that we go a lot faster in mediation than we do in court. And that's just because of a big court system like downtown Chicago is completely backlogged. Mm-hmm. No matter how many judges, I mean, they're just inundated with cases. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack on the maintenance. I mean, we could probably do 3 podcasts on maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. On bucket 1, bucket 2, etc. But let's talk about, Andrea, something more light, right?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about somebody else's case that could make somebody feel better, right?
Because I feel like right now, these poor people listening to this episode, they're like, oh God, it can't get any worse. You know what, it can, but we won't fill you in on that. Well, I mean, guys, this is why hire a good attorney. Okay, let's hear from some people who had some really wacky alimony agreements, shall
Agreed.
We? First of all, Morgan, since you're the one in the field, in the trenches, what did they say? What's the saying? I don't know. Like when you're like not in the war zone, you're the one slinging the mud.
I am not following, but if I was, nope. I would totally play.
Nope, not even a little. Okay, what are things that you have seen that you've been like, are we really? Like, this is really, like, okay.
Mm-hmm. So I have seen $50,000 a month hotel stays that people need covered. Or at least they allege that. Mm-hmm. I have seen, you know, it's funny. I think I was talking to you before we started recording about 5 to 10 years ago, it was so taboo if we saw a line item as a maintenance need for purposes of plastic surgery, Botox. It was so taboo to talk about, you know, anything done on a woman's body. And so if you put it, you know, on the financial disclosure and we're asking for maintenance on that, everyone was like, oh, what is that? You know, that kind of thing. Now it's like the opposite. It's if you don't have those line items, people are like, where are these line items? So now it's totally normal to have a budget line item that you need covered for maintenance for Botox or facials or whatever a woman may do. And you know what? Funny thing is, it goes both ways. I am seeing more men doing plastic surgery and Botox, and it's on their line items as well. And now it's just normal.
That's so funny how, like, and I think, like, maybe if it's not even, like, cosmetic stuff, just anything that we actually spend money on, that, like, back in the day, we're like, no, like, I feel like we're like, no, I don't really go out to eat that often.
Totally.
Or I don't really need to do this.
Or I don't really buy those things on Amazon until they come out in discovery.
Oh. And, like, thank God that my case didn't get to that. Actually, you know what? Funny story. Y'all gather around, for I have a story for you. There actually, in my divorce, I will tell this because I think this is pretty benign. My ex-husband wanted me to pay him back for Amazon purchases for when I redecorated my home office.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we were married. Like we were still actively
like happily married.
Okay.
Allegedly.
I wouldn't say happily married. No, I would say married, living under one roof.
Got it.
And he was like, I don't. It was like the strangest thing. Like none of the attorneys could figure out like what he was talking about. And he had all of these, not like receipts, obviously, because it was from Amazon, but like screenshots of charges that he kept, like, he was, like, obsessing over, over all of these, like, fake succulents.
Like your pencil holder.
Yeah, like my pencil holders, like a rug, like all of these things that he was like, she redecorated the office. And I just kept thinking, like, I know, and didn't it look so good?
That pink office of mine.
It was a beautiful office. And now, of course, like, guys, full disclosure, I was trying to find some funny things to read from the interwebs about divorce, about these things, but now I'm realizing none of these are actually that funny. So I don't even know what to tell you. I mean, there's a lot of memes out there about, like, people cutting things in half and, like, just, like, silly, silly stuff that doesn't really even matter. And I think that our stories are a lot more entertaining.
Agreed.
So I mean, moral of the story is, folks, whether your maintenance is high or you yourself are just high maintenance.
True.
It's all part of it. It's all part of the process. And this is why we're here, because we want you to know the fun parts. Are there fun parts of a divorce? Not really. But we want you to know what it really looks like, because had I had this information when I was going through my divorce, believe me when I tell you, I would have made some very different and more thoughtful choices. So please take this information for what it's worth. Get your facts from experts, not from your friends, not from Facebook groups, not from BuzzFeed, not from your favorite meme account on Instagram. Get it from an expert, because this is your life, this is your livelihood, this is the future of your children.
That's right.
I mean, it's important stuff. So,
and you know what, friends? You have this. You're going to get through this. And if you need anything, we have you, right? Because this is
How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Until next time.
We'll see you later.